till 5, chapter 1, text number 31. The chapter is entitled The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrata. So word for word,
that.
Vayuha.
Certainly.
Tat rata.
Of his chariot.
Charana.
Of the wheels.
Nami.
By the rims.
Krita.
Made.
Parikyata.
Trenches.
Te.
Those.
Sapta.
Seven.
Sindava.
Oceans.
Asan.
Became.
Yata.
Because of which.
Eva.
Certainly.
Krita.
Were made.
Sapta.
Seven.
Bhuva.
Of the Bhumandala.
Dvipa.
Islands.
Translation. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When Priyavrata drove his chariot behind the sun, the rims of his chariot wheels created impressions that later became seven oceans, dividing the planetary systems known as Bhumandala into seven islands. Please repeat, when Priyavrata drove his chariot behind the sun, the rims of his chariot wheels
created impressions
that later became seven oceans, dividing the planetary system
known as Bhumandala
into seven islands. Purport. It's a little technical, but it's interesting. Sometimes the planets in outer space are called islands. We have experience of various types of islands in the ocean. Similarly, the various planets, divided into 14 lokas, are islands in the ocean of space. As Priyavrata drove his chariot behind the sun, he created seven different types of oceans and planetary systems, which altogether are known as Bhumandala or Bhuloka. In the Gayatri Mantra, we chant Om Bhur Bhuva Swa Tat Savitur Varenyam. Above the Bhuvaloka planet system is Bhurvaloka. Above that is Swargaloka, the heavenly planetary system. All these planetary systems are controlled by Savita, the sun god. By chanting the Gayatri Mantra just after rising early in the morning, one worships the sun god. End of purport. Om Agyanta Mirandasya Gyananjana Sarakaya Chaksuru Miritam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Jaitanya Manavi Sram Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swam Dadati Kam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Ghor Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this chapter is entitled The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrata, and we're hearing. You require translation?
Me?
Yeah, you understand?
No, thank you. I understand English.
Understand English? Okay. You understand English?
No, not completely.
If you want to do it, yeah. You can translate.
Yeah, I hope I will hear. Maybe I give you my...
I'm not speaking so loud tonight because my voice is not so strong.
I'll try.
Don't go too far.
Yes, they're right there.
So we're hearing about the activities of Maharaj Priyavrat. And now he's been given this service to assist the sun god in his service. There's some deficiency in the universal structure. Maharaj was requested by his grandfather, Lord Brahma, to take up this service. And what is he doing? He's making islands, making oceans. So, here in Vedic literature, we find that if you want to know anything about creation, or what is called the sub-creation, because Srimad Bhagavatam deals with these topics, Sarga and Visarga. Sarga means creation, Visarga means sub-creation. Then you can find it in the Bhagavatam, or you can find it in the Vedic literatures. Anything you want to know about anything is in the Vedic literatures. If you want to know how to become a good demon, you can study the Vedas. You want to become anything, it's all in the Vedic literatures. The Vedas are complete. But here we're talking not only Vedic literature or Vedic knowledge, we're talking about things that are more transcendental. Priyavrata is a great devotee of the Lord. He was fixed in Brahman realization. But he was asked to do this service, so he gave up his meditation and took up the service of assisting the sun god in his services. It wasn't easy for him to do that. He didn't really want to do it. He was happy just chanting Hare Krishna, taking a little prasadam, and meditating on the Lord. But he had a qualification or a quality that no one else had that was available. He could assist the sun god in this big endeavor that he had to do as far as arranging for the universal structure. So, he was requested to leave his peaceful arrangement and take up this very difficult service, which meant he had to give up brahmachari life and he had to become a household. And he was already fixed in brahmachari, he didn't need to change his ashram. But on the request of Lord Brahma, explaining the need, he surrendered. It's a very essential point that's being given here, is that devotional service really means to please the Lord, and to please the Lord's representative. And sometimes, not all sometimes, mostly all the times, it means making a sacrifice, giving up some of our ideas on how best we can practice devotional service and taking up the instructions of, you know, higher authorities. The whole scriptures are replete with that, where persons are asked and persons are taking on great responsibilities, great service in order to please the Lord or to preach the glories of the Lord. So they make a sacrifice. But the sacrifice, in the sense, is that one is not really losing anything in that sacrifice. One is just giving up one's own conceptions of what is best for oneself and accepting the authority, which is the ultimate principle of spiritual advancement. Spiritual advancement really means to follow the instructions of higher authorities. So surrender, as Prabhupada said, surrender is the name of the game. Without surrender, there's no real spiritual advancement. Of course, we're surrendering, we're chanting Hare Krishna, that's surrendering. We're eating what Krishna offers to us in the form of prasadam, as opposed to what we may like to eat, that's also surrendering. And we're taking time to, maybe sleep less and to do things in order to please. But these are given to us at the beginning of our spiritual life. But as we go on in spiritual life, there's more and more requests or tests, that there's more opportunities for advancement by surrendering. Krishna does that. Krishna is us always pushing us through the spiritual master or through various ways, and through the material energy also, to become more and more surrendered in our Krishna consciousness. Because surrender is the whole program. It's more like thinking in terms of what pleases the Lord. And a Vance devotee, or one who's fixed, always wants the opportunity for more and more surrender. A neophyte devotee is just thinking how to become comfortable in whatever little situation and go on nicely, chant some Hare Krishnas and do a little thing here and there, some service this way and that way, you know. And not too much austerity, not too much difficulties. But one cannot really taste the happiness in Krishna consciousness in that consciousness. The happiness really comes when one is put in a situation of having to surrender more and more to the process. Just like one time Prabhupada said to one devotee, sit down and chant 16 rounds straight. That's an austerity. Just to sit down with the beads and just chant 16 rounds. You know, every day, get up and perform spiritual activities at the same time. Same activities. In other words, the mind is restless. The mind has got its own programs for how best to make advancement. So the mind is always trying to avoid austerities or difficulties and trying to find the easy path. It's the nature of conditioned souls, looking for the easy way. But easy way means no way. There's a saying, if the going gets easy, you may be going downhill. So if you're going downhill, it's easy. You're going downhill. So spiritual life sometimes is compared to climbing a mountain. There's many stories in various religious teachings of mountains and climbers as being analogous to spiritual life. To climb a mountain requires great skill, determination, strength, and a lot of mercy. So spiritual life is like that. Priyavrata, I mean, he performed his austerities and penances, was fixed in everything. He was actually taking a risk by taking on this service. And you'll see, as the chapter goes on, how he actually started to slip in his spiritual strength. he was becoming affected by Maya. As a brahmachari, he was fixed. He was happy. He was doing his austerities. Now he was asked to get married and take on this big service of assisting the sun god and arranging for the universal structure to be put back in place. And he had a... Here he's creating oceans, he's creating planets, or not creating planets, but he's dividing the planetary systems and making the different Bhumangala, Bhurmangala, Swargalanga, Swargaloka, the different lokas. Difficult, you know. So he got married in order to support his service. Usually if you have a great service like that, you need a wife to help you. Sometimes they say that. Anyway, that's not always the case, but in some cases, it's like that. You know, you need somebody to wash your clothes while you're out there doing all these austerities. But he did it, and you'll see later on, he gets a little bit attracted to his wife in a sensual way. He starts to see his wife in the form of sense gratification. He doesn't fall down, but he starts to slip a little bit. But somehow or other, by his power of his own spiritual practice and by the mercy of Lord Brahma and his spiritual master Narada Muni, he picked up and he became strong again. But he made a sacrifice on behalf of... And you'll see that anything great requires sacrifice. And that's just the way life is, especially in spiritual life. If you really want to do something to push on Krishna consciousness, such as building a temple, takes great sacrifices. Maintaining a temple takes great sacrifices. Preaching and making devotees requires sacrifice. Sacrifice means to take on some hardships, to take on some difficulties, to take on some personal austerities in order for, what we say, to satisfy the spiritual master, to satisfy the Lord. And there's always a risk in that. But Srila Prabhupada, he was nicely situated in Vrindavan. He had his little room. He had his, you know, kitchen. And people were bringing water for him every day. One lady was bringing buckets of water for his bath and for his cooking. He was happy. He was writing his books, sitting in his room. But he kept his spiritual master's instructions in mind that he had to leave and go to the West. And so he got on a boat and he had 2 heart attacks and then the third one when he got to America. Seasicknesses, hardly any association, no association. All his god brothers were in India, he had no association. So he did it as a sacrifice to preach Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada also said, it's an interesting statement, he said, when he was in America preaching for many years, this was towards the end of his preaching, it was around 1975 or 76. He was sitting in a very luxurious hotel room. And there was a few devotees sitting with him, and one devotee had been with Prabhupada in Vrindavan when he was in his rooms. He had visited later. And Prabhupada said, "Do you remember how nicely I was living in my rooms in Vrindavan? You know, everything was so nice. You know, just being in Vrindavan." He said, and he was glorifying that, and then he said, "You know, I would really long to go back there." But then he said, "For me, that's sense gratification." In other words, to do what you want is sense gratification. And to do what Krishna wants is Krishna consciousness or spiritual life. So surrender is the name of the game. And here we see Priyavrata, he surrendered. And he absorbed himself in his service. So much so that he's glorified not only for his service, but for his surrender to do this wonderful service. He was a glorious personality already, but now he's even glorified more so because of making a great sacrifice on behalf of what we say religious principles, or in order to preach the glories of the Lord. And one becomes empowered when one surrenders too. That's another thing. To do great things comes by empowerment. And empowerment comes by the way of surrender. And it's not that one becomes empowered because of, well, they have good education in a certain field, or they have good talents. I've seen many devotees who have these things, material talents, professional talents, like that. But unless they really use them in Krishna consciousness, in a way to please the Lord, usually they don't find happiness in those things. In fact, the best they can get out of that is they find some false pride comes in because of these things. But those who have nothing and then do wonderful things later, it's because of their surrender. It's not because of, you know, having some good qualities or something, or being in the right place at the right time. It's just that the Lord, by their surrender, empowers them to do wonderful things when he sees the surrender. So surrender really is the name of the game. That's about this, that this whole chapter is all about surrender. Really. And Krishna says, as you surrender me, I reward you accordingly. Yayatam mam prapadyante tam sataiva bhajami aham mama vartmanu vartante manusya partha sarvasyaha. He says, all of them, as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path, O son of Prita. So what does he mean by everyone follows his path? Krishna has chalked out two paths, the path of what we say, the path of light and the path of darkness, or the path of spiritual practice and the path of material activity. So Krishna has created both paths. So either one is following one of the two paths, but they're both Krishna's path. Krishna recommends we follow the spiritual path. But the other path is also his path. He's made the laws that govern that path. So everyone is following one of the two paths, or somehow a combination of each of them. So therefore, everyone is somehow or other getting Krishna's reward according to which path they're following and how much they're following that path. So Krishna's reciprocating accordingly. Of course, in the spiritual path, he's reciprocating directly. One is under his internal energy, Daivi Shakti, or the internal energy, which is called, which is controlled by Yogamaya, or Radharani. And the other one is controlled by Mahamaya, Bahiranga Shakti. The Bahiranga Shakti is the external energy of the Lord. It's also Shakti. It's called Shakti too. Antaranga Shakti, Bahiranga Shakti, and Tatastha Shakti. Three internal, three energies of the Lord. So the Bahiranga Shakti is the external energy of the Lord. But one is not directly in contact with Krishna through that energy. One is directly in contact through his agents, who are empowered by Krishna to control that energy and give the rewards of that individual according to how much they're absorbed in that energy, and whatever way they're absorbed in, what type of desires they have, and how much they're trying to fulfill those desires. So people get the reactions of their activity. So Krishna says, everyone follows my path. But Krishna recommends we follow the spiritual path. And therefore, the spiritual path is surrender. And surrender is not something that one does and then you get it over with. Oh, I'm surrendered. You can be surrendered 1 minute and the next minute not be surrendered. Surrender is a constant feature of a consciousness of surrender. It's a mood of activity which is always trying to fulfill the desires of the spiritual master and the Lord. That is the mood. That is surrender. Not just to, we'll say, well, I'm surrendered. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I'm doing that. You may be doing this and that, but you may not be surrendered. Or you may be partially surrendered. So surrender is a consciousness. And when Krishna sees that, he empowers the devotee to do wonderful service on his behalf. And at the same time, he gives that devotee facility to surrender more and more. It's like, well, I surrendered for 20 years and now I should just take it a little easy now. It's been, you know, now it's the time for a vacation. You know, take a break from surrender for a while. But that doesn't work. What happens is that you lose what you gained. You lose what you gained. You can go back exactly where you started with 20 years from ago and be the same before. I mean, you have some credits there, but you'll be the same person again. Prabhupada says, and it's a fact, people who take up Krishna consciousness and then go back to Maya, they just pick up where they left off in Maya, exactly where they left off. And they're just back there again, trying to fulfill those same desires, practically in the same way again. So, therefore, surrender is a consciousness of always trying to surrender to the desire of the spiritual master, desire of the Lord, like that. And it's a mood of service, too. The mood of service is the mood of wanting to serve and trying to serve in a pleasing way, trying to serve in the best possible way. And that is also not, I'm doing my service and that's all. That's not really pleasing. We're doing our service in the mood of wanting to do the service, eager to do the service, and trying to do the best we can in that service in order to please the Lord, please the devotees. This is Krishna consciousness. Activity alone is just not the whole process. It's the mood that counts. It's the mood that counts. You know, we should be looking forward to our service. We should be looking forward to taking the opportunities for Krishna to give us more and more opportunities for surrender. That's devotional service. If we're thinking, oh no, I did all this stuff yesterday, I got to do the same thing again today? Come on. Where's some variety? No, it's like getting up in the morning, oh, just like sometimes we think, I finished my 16 rounds. Mm. Now life starts. Now I can get into doing these other things. But then again, the next day starts and you start over with zero again. Each day you go back to zero and you got to do 16. So it's not like you got to do it. It's like you look forward to do it. And you look forward to serving, you look forward to surrendering, you look forward to associating, you look forward. It's an enthusiasm. And if we're not thinking like that, we may not always be feeling like that. To feel like that requires a certain stage of spiritual advancement. But we should be thinking like that at least. And that thinking process gets us to the process, helps us get to the process of realizing that level of consciousness. To always be eager, enthusiastic for our spiritual practice. But some days, you know, it's like it's so smooth and everything is going. And other days, it's like trying to run uphill with a big weight on your back, you know. It can be one way or the other. The modes are like that. The modes change and our consciousness is affected by the modes also. At least to some degree, depending how transcendental we are. But a devotee never takes surrender as a difficulty. They look forward to surrender. They look forward to sacrificing. They look forward to these things. Now, Priyavrata, it took him a while, but he wasn't averse to surrender. He was just happy where he was. He was just happy where he was. You know? So sometimes it's like that. We go on as Krishna consciousness and we get so nicely situated and we're going nicely in our service, and then Krishna says, okay, I want you to do this. Or I need you to do that. Or you should try something else. It's like that. And the devotees should think, if that's what the spiritual master wants, if that's what the Lord wants, then that's what I want. And then one becomes what we say, nice. Here, on another point, Prabhupada says, by chanting the Gayatri Mantra, just after rising early in the morning, one worships the sun god. He mentions the first some Om, Bor, Bhuva, Swa, Tat, Savita, Varenyam. He mentions some of the first lines in the Gayatri Mantra. Some of the first words in the... Jai Shri Shri Gaurinitai Ki Jai Shri Radhakunja Bihari Ji Ki Jai. So the Gayatri Mantra, Prabhupada said, one worships the sun god. So Gayatri is there. Seven lines of Gayatri. Of course, when you get sannyas, you get another line. You get eight lines. So, Gayatri Mantra is there. And we're actually... Prabhupada mentions a few words in the Gayatri Mantra here. So, the sun is Surya. It's Surya Narayan. It's not only... It's... Prabhupada calls him by his name, controlled by Savita. Savita is another name. What is his name? Vivashwan. Vivashwan is the name of the sun god. Like that. So one time in one discussion, one devotee was saying to Prabhupada, you know, there are people who worship the sun, and, you know, sometimes the devotees also. Prabhupada said, yes. We honor the sun god, like that. But we worship the Krishna sun. The Krishna sun. Krishna is the sun of all suns. He's giving light to the sun god. He's giving power to the sun god to provide light for us. So Krishna is the sun. Of course, we honor the sun. Radharani, she also chants some mantras to the sun god every day. She does her puja. So the sun is very nice. Sun gives light, gives heat, gives happiness, gives nourishment, gives so many things. We were speaking about this yesterday, a little bit about the sun god. So here, there are three planetary systems, Bhumandala and Borva Mandala, Bhu, Bor, and Swarga. Higher, lower, and middle planetary systems. 14 planetary systems divided into three categories. Like that. The Earth is situated in the middle planetary systems. Like that. And that makes up the whole planetary systems. There are so many planets within the systems. But Brahma Bhuvana Laka Purvana Rita Arjuna, from the highest planet to the material world down to the lowest, Krishna says, they're all places of misery. Why? Because there's birth and death. And wherever there's birth and death, there's also other calamities that come. So even in the highest planetary system, Swargaloka, or even above that, all the way up to Brahmaloka, there's death. One has to take birth and death, which is contrary to the nature of the soul. The living entity is not more meant to take birth, is not meant to die. The soul never is born or dies. Just like we look outside, 6:30 in the morning, the sun is rising. But does the sun rise? In the evening, what time? 7:30, 8 o'clock maybe? 8. The sun sets. But does the sun rise and the sun set? No. From our perspective, it does. The sun rises and the sun sets. But the sun is always in one place, is always somewhere moving around in the planet, in the orbit. So there's no question of setting and rising for the sun. The sun is always somewhere. We see it at a certain angle. So we're seeing sunset and sunrise. Someone else at another part of the world is seeing the same sunrise and sunset at a different time. So the sun never rises or sets. It's just there. But the same way, the soul never takes birth nor never dies. But we think, oh, I die. We think I take birth. Just like the sun is in one place, the soul is in one place. So when it leaves the body, it goes in another place. But it's never taking birth and never dying. It's just in different places within the creation. And ultimately, hopefully, going back to spiritual world. Okay, any questions? Yes. Sunananda Prabhu.
Maharaj, I would like to thank you very much for your presentation, which is heart-touching and soul-nourishing. I feel really blessed, and I would like to ask a question. You explained that this surrender is actual level of consciousness, and it seems understood like this, that from your presentation, if you're not endeavoring all the time to go to this process of surrender, actually we can say that we are not progressing, we are actually somehow
calculating.
More like prone to be influenced by Maya.
Krishna says in Gita, one who sees me and everything and everything in me, I'm never lost. So Krishna, through the spiritual master, through the agency of material energy, or through various other means, is always, constantly, arranging for the living entity to come back to him in different ways. So surrender is a constant feature of devotional service. And Krishna is arranging situations to help us surrender more and more. Sometimes they're just routine, but sometimes, you know, just doing your service requires the consciousness of surrendering to your service as you're doing it. If you're not, you can do your service and not be surrendered to it. You can just do it, just to get it over with. In your mind, you're thinking, let me get it over with, because you want to be doing something else. So that's not a surrendered consciousness. And you get very little from that activity. So devotional service means to surrender to the will of Krishna in every moment. And therefore, it's a consciousness. It's conscious of Krishna, conscious of what I need to do to serve. And if you can't think of anything to do to serve, you can always chant Hare Krishna. That's surrender. You can surrender to the holy name. Like that. But if our minds are somewhere else, wherever they are, then they're thinking in terms of I. I consciousness is material consciousness. I consciousness in relationship to devotional service is spiritual consciousness, but not in relationship to, you know, just me. Like, how best can I surrender? If I'm thinking in that way, that I consciousness is Krishna consciousness. But if we're not engaged in devotional service, or not endeavoring to be engaged in devotional service, or not serving in the proper mood, the mind, which is really the block between Krishna and the soul, the mind takes the position of being the, what we say, in charge, and he makes his own plans. And those plans are usually based on what the mind likes. So sometimes devotees always look within devotional service how just to get by. That's another kind of Maya consciousness, just to get by. We're not trying to get by, we're always trying to use our intelligence how to surrender more and how to serve nicer. You know, Prabhupada said there's three kinds of servants: first class, second class, third class. First class, the third class is they're told what to do and they still can't do it. Second class is they're told what to do and they can do it. And first class knows what to do without being told. So, and even in the, there are circumstances where there's things that are required to do, just like Prabhupada said, if you walk into a dirty place and you leave it the same way, then your consciousness is no better than the place. You walk into a dirty bathroom and you just walk out, you know. But if you're thinking, you know, this place is dirty, it should be clean, you make a little effort to clean, or you make some arrangements for somebody to clean, then you're in the right consciousness. So, you know, so to think, to use your intelligence how to serve, and not just, oh, this is my service and that's all it counts for. Whatever, how to serve in every situation. Use your intelligence. That's part of Krishna. That's part of surrender. That is surrender. Using the intelligence on how to serve. How best to serve like that. So if we're not in that mood of surrender, we're in the mood of surrendering to the mind. It's either one or the other. It's no, there's no in between. You have 24 hours in the day. How many hours are you using for Krishna? How many hours are you using for yourself? Yeah. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Ultimately, we have nothing to do with this material world. So how much we continue to stay within material consciousness means that's how much we're in Maya. Whether we like our service or we don't like it, for a neophyte devotee, that's a big thing. For one who's fixed, it's not even a consideration. It's like Prabhupada says, my success in spreading Krishna consciousness was, it didn't matter whether it was easy or hard, it was the instructions. Therefore, I was successful. I never considered easy or hard. I considered it the instruction. And that's a real devotee. A real devotee is thinking in terms of how to do the service and not whether it's easy or hard or whether I like it or don't like it. The strength you get in order to come to that consciousness is the chanting of your rounds. When you have nice sadhana in the morning, then you can come to that consciousness easier. When your sadhana is weak, then it's hard to be in that mood of surrender or in that mood of service, you know. It's situated on our sadhana, which is basically situated on our chanting. Yes, question you had.
početku Bhakti Yogi se savjetio, čuo sam da Bhakti razvija znanje.
In the beginning of Bhakti Yoga, I heard that the devotee develops this knowledge and the renunciation.
Čak i Krishna u Bhagavad Gita u četvrtom poglavlju čini mi se kaže da žrtvovanje izvršeno u znanju zapravo je najpotpunije na neki način.
Even Krishna in the fourth chapter in Bhagavad Gita, I think, said that
žrtvovanje u znanju,
that is sacrifice in knowledge with consciousness, sa svjesnošću.
Je najpotpunije.
It is actually most perfect.
A s druge strane, vidimo iz nekih primjera da se čak i iz povijesti bhakti koji su bili nepismeni.
On the other side, we can also see from the history that some devotees which are literate
mogu se dostići savršenstvo bhakti.
They can achieve perfection in bhakti.
Na primjer, iz Chaitanya Charitamrite, Ramana koji je bio nepismeni.
Yeah, so many.
For instance, from Chaitanya Charitamrita, this Ramana koji se učinio.
Koji je bio nepismeni, koji zapravo nije znao čitati Bhagavad Gita.
Which you cannot read Bhagavad Gita.
Ali samo, ali ima tu devociju prema Krišni kad je vidio kako je Krišna se zove na krenu grad. Kako je
Krišna vozač koče.
Dakle, Krišna kao vozač koče zamišljao koliko ga boli grad, što je kako se zove kretio se prema Arjuni. I s tom devocijom na neki način imao privrženost Krišnu, iako je bio nepismen, kako se zove, Šri Krišna Četina je rekao da on pravi rama kvalificirani vajišnji.
So he had great devotion, he was really touched when he saw how Krishna is his charioteer of Arjuna, and also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was.
There's a couple questions in there. Which one is the one?
So his question is,
moje pitanje je koliko je u Bhakti Yogi zapravo to znanje potrebno, jer vidimo da ako Bhakta razvije tu čistu devociju, bez nekog znanja može jako puno napredovati u svjesnosti Krišne.
So the question is, so how much is important that knowledge, because you can see that even for instance, in which group the devotees they can develop the highest stages of devotional service.
Krishna Bhagavatam explains that by rendering devotional service, causeless knowledge and detachment from material matter automatically happen. There is some requirement for, this is explained in Nectar of Devotion, for some preliminary knowledge, the knowledge of how to surrender, and some basic knowledge. And that's required. And one has to learn to become detached from, you know, things that cannot be used in Krishna consciousness. But the process of devotional service itself gives knowledge. Prabhupada said there are people who are illiterate, but their knowledge comes by surrender, not so much by studying books. You study books, but you won't get much unless you're surrendered. Then when you read books, the knowledge becomes understood, not simply by reading. So we need a little bit of knowledge in the beginning to understand how to surrender and how to engage in devotional service. And once we do that, Krishna will give us understanding of the knowledge through the process of surrender. Now, if you want to preach, that's different. Then you have to study the books. But to make advancement in devotional services, then you just get a little bit of understanding. You hear Bhagavatam every day. Nasti prayesu abhidreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. You don't even have to read. All you have to do is hear the classes every day, and that's enough. One of our acharyas, Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he couldn't even read and write his name, but he had full realization of Krishna. So we honor him as, you know, a great acharya. So if you have that capacity for intellectual study, then you can pursue that. But for making advancement in Krishna consciousness, ultimately it's not required. All that's required is surrender. Because by surrender, you get, Krishna gives you knowledge. He breaks your attachments to the material energy. He does it. You just surrender. Yes.
So, when I was a kid, then I was listening to tales, you know, like behind seven seas and seven hills. It was like that. Always. When something is far away, then I can hear it always, like behind seven seas and seven hills. It's like here.
Mountains.
Yeah, like mountains, hills. Did you ever hear such saying in America? No, it's
like something valuable can be achieved when you cross the seven seas and seven mountains.
That's nice. America is not so spiritual as Croatia is.
it comes on my mind. It's possible that, you know, that stayed in the you know, like society.
Yeah.
On the Vedic times.
These things filter in.
Yeah.
I don't remember any songs when I was growing up. Most of our songs were something else. No, I can't remember anything. But I accept what you say in terms of what you heard. Yeah, it's nice. We find there's certain principles of, we say, there's certain higher principles of existence that's found within material society. This is material. But the idea that beyond it there's something more wonderful. Well, what is it? They never tell you. Bhagavatam tells you. You know, when you're growing up, you have a lot of this thing.
Yeah, I was always asking, from where is that? Seven hills? Why seven hills and seven seas? What's that?
Now you got
what
it.
That saying? Yeah, I know.
Maharaj Priyavrata was your childhood guru. So, yeah. It's there. But I'm unhappy to say I haven't heard that in America. Of course, I haven't heard everything, so I don't know. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Nice song, yeah.
Can I ask a question? I'm not going to be like... Lots of stories we can find that Kshatriya's kings, they married one princess, and then she brought with herself also like 200 maidens or something like that. So it is explained that sometimes the king had also child with some of the maidens.
Mm-hmm.
But how is that those who doesn't, who hadn't child, because by nature their mothers, how they deal in that situation. Because all of them are mothers by nature, but some of them just get a child, not all of them. So how is that fulfilled in Vedic society? Because it is explained that in Vedic...
So you're concerned about the mothers?
Excuse me?
You're concerned about the mothers?
No, I'm just asking the question. I'm
trying to wonder, why are you asking that question? Why, if a mother, if a woman doesn't have a child, how does she see other women that have children? That's basically your question, right?
I'm asking that question because...
You can ask the ladies, they can answer it.
I'm asking this in regard to Vedic society. It is explained that everything is perfect, everything is arranged by Vedic arrangement. But it seems this is quite...
You want to know? You know the story of Chitraketu?
Yes, no.
You know that story?
Yeah.
So how?
Stone-hearted they were.
Yeah, they were unhappy because one queen had a child, and that king was giving all his affection to that queen. It's like that. If a man has a woman and she bears his child, he's going to naturally give her affection, as opposed to a woman who doesn't have his child. That's just natural. So the question is, how do the other women see it? Well, each woman is different. Some will maybe feel sad, others might be feel angry, others might feel neglected, and others might not even care. People are different also.
One of my friends said to me that actually in animal society, let's say that it involves some of sheep wolves can get the offsprings, but some of them can't because they are weak. In some seasons they have not enough food, so those others are caring after mane.
I'm wondering why you're asking these questions. Really has nothing to do with spiritual life at all.
Well, I'm asking this because sometimes I met people in the studio, they're asking very nice questions about philosophical points, so I'm quite concerned that maybe someday I can find such a person.
You can find what?
A person who can ask me this question in the street. While I'm preaching somewhere, sometimes people have good questions.
So you just want to be prepared for that question.
Yeah,
that's like putting the horse before the cart. It's like there's 1,400,000,000,000,000 questions that you haven't been asked. And why did you choose that one? There's so many questions you haven't been asked. One is the one about... Have you been asked what's it like in the spiritual world? Have you been asked that question?
Did they ask me?
Yeah.
Yes, sometimes.
Oh, okay. So that's a good one to know. Or the question is, well, why do you do what you're doing? Why do you live a life like that, right? I don't know, I can't see any value in your question, I'm sorry. I'm just it really has no bearing in Krishna consciousness at all. It's just, you should be asking questions that are relevant to spiritual advancement or questions that you can use for preaching in your service, you know, like that. If the king has many wives and one wife has a child, how do the other wives feel?
I was thinking about...
I know Prabhupada would say, why are you asking that question? I know he would say that. I know he would say that.
All right, may I just try?
That's why I'm saying it, because I know Prabhupada would say, why are you asking that question? What's the value of that question?
Well, may I try? I have some doubts.
Okay.
Well, my question was if there are mothers in nature,
mm-hmm.
and they should, like any woman, have a husband and fulfill that nature of their motherhood. So I don't see any problem
so,
in
but
this question. Prabhupada also said that every woman should marry, and marriage means children.
So, I don't... The question is, there's no answer to the question. The answer is, how does someone feel? Well, someone may feel that way, and somebody else may feel this way, and someone else may feel that way. So where's the answer? Is every woman who doesn't have a child going to feel the same? That's to say, all women, there's the motherly nature is there, but all women are not the same. There are some women who don't get married. And there's some women who, one of my godbrothers, his cousin, she's a renunciate. She's been a renunciate for 32 years. She's a yogini. So, you know, she never thought of motherhood. He's a yogi. So every woman, generally, from a material perspective, generally a woman wants to get married. But if a woman has a higher consciousness, I mean, she wants a child. If a woman has a higher consciousness, she may or may not feel the same. She may just want to practice devotional service. There are many great women in our system who... You know, Mirabai, Emalata, Janavadevi, Ganga Mata Goswamini, there's so many ladies who were great souls. Even in our society, there's some ladies that never get married. So, I mean, your question is, you want to feel the compassion. You want to empathize with their suffering. Is that it? I'm sorry. You just asked the wrong person the question. I can't honestly answer your question. Because I just don't think it's an important question. There was one sannyasi, you would ask him a question. He would say, is there any good questions? Questions means, how can I make advancement in spiritual life? That's a question. Prabhupada said, I only asked one question to my spiritual master, how can I serve you? These are questions. How can I overcome my anartis, obstacles like that? These are the questions that are relevant. Now, we can ask any question, you know. There's so many questions you can ask. But it's just a waste of time. Ask the questions that are relevant to your spiritual advancement or something that you want to understand so you can have that understanding to apply into your Krishna consciousness. These are questions. Questions. People are asking questions all the time, but they're not important. You might think, well, this is important, but I can't see the value of it.
I see. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm just honest.
Huh?
I see.
I'm sorry, I just can't agree with you. Nowadays, people want spiritual leaders to patronize all their maya, you know. Oh, Guru Maharaj, he's supposed to be a nice guy and answer everything just the way you want it. It's not like that. That's not spiritual life. I'm sorry, I'm not going to patronize your silly question. I think it's a silly question. I think it's an irrelevant question. totally irrelevant.
Guru Maharaj, I accept this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Hare Krishna. But the point I'm trying to make, and it's a really important point, is that we should ask questions that are relevant. I'll sit and listen to classes of other spiritual masters sometimes, and a question will come to my mind. And then I'll think, is this question really important? And then sometimes I'll just dismiss the question. Or sometimes I'm just trying to say something because I want to ask a question. Yeah. We may ask questions for the benefit of others. We can do that also. But questions, as it's understood according to Vedic culture, the whole principle of asking questions really means, how will it affect my spiritual life? How will I be able to make advancement like that? And I've seen Prabhupada, I listen to Prabhupada's tapes every day. I'm always hearing Prabhupada. And sometimes devotees ask these questions. Prabhupada said, why are you asking that? What's the purpose of the question? Or another time, one time, somebody asked Prabhupada a question about Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada said, asked them the question about preaching or something. Prabhupada said, why don't you read? The answer's in my books. Why are you asking this question? He went on for a half hour chastising that devotee. That devotee was so, it was like he was in the floor. And then one devotee was feeling sorry for this other devotee who was getting pounded by Prabhupada, and he tried to break Prabhupada's thing, and he started to change the subject. Prabhupada dismissed him and went back and just said, you're a preacher. You don't know these books. Read the books. I'm spending so many time writing these books. Why don't you read these books? What are you going to tell people if you don't know these answers? Why are you asking this question? You don't read my books. A half hour, it happened in New Vrindavan. And Prabhupada wanted to make the point that, all right, ask questions. But if the questions are obvious, then don't ask them. Okay. Thank you very much.
It's not easy to be here now.
I'm just trying to help. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. I'm not on an ego trip to just to me. Because a lot of times, there's so many questions we could ask. And therefore, in choosing questions, sometimes I'll sit there and I'll be ready to ask a question, and I can just see it just doesn't fit in with the discussion that's going on. Or if I really want to know the answer, I won't waste time asking the question. I'll just find out the answer just by reading the books or something like that. If a point is being made in a class and you want to add to that by making a point in terms of a question that brings out a point, that really adds to the whole flavor of the thing. So, like that. So, I love to answer questions. We have questions and answers. But sometimes we get some of the questions that, and we answer them too. But a lot of times devotees, another feature of asking questions is to get the answer you want. That's another feature of asking questions. You're looking for a certain answer. And people will do that. They'll ask the same questions to so many people. There's an honest question answerer asker who will get, who will ask the same question to get a clear understanding. But then there's those who want us, who are looking for a certain answer. And they have an angle on the answer they're looking for. You know. It's usually to satisfy some kind of material attachment in relationship to Krishna consciousness. So they ask these questions to different people and find the answer that they like the best. And then what happens is that then they got their answer and they say, well, he said this. And so that's, you know, devotees do that sometimes. We want, in our spiritual life, we want the thing that can help us the most, not the thing that is the easiest to accept. The things that are easiest to accept may also be the things to help us, but the ones that help us the most are usually the things that require surrender. I mean, this is what did I choose from this? This whole purport is all about planets, lokas, Gayatri mantras, sun gods, islands. I could talk about that, but how much would you gain from that? I chose Priyavrata's mood of surrender. That we can learn from. Prabhupada, when he gave classes, he wasn't just talking. He would talk to help devotees understand two things. What's the nature of Krishna? How to practice devotional service? And how to surrender to devotional service? That's class. Not just, you know, we can talk about a nice subject. Of course, we can talk about Krishna's leelas and pastimes. They purify us just simply by hearing those. But when it comes to philosophy, we always want to take philosophy in a way that is helpful to how we can make advancement. The world is always looking how to make advancement, how to surrender, how to understand things more correctly, like that. I'm not saying you're not like that. I'm just bringing out these points. I'm just speaking on these things. So, and spiritual life means, you know, we want to move forward. Devotee is always eager to move forward. And that's why class is there, to help us understand things clearer, to answer questions, to help us surrender more, to understand more about Krishna, to become more attached to Krishna by understanding more about Krishna, like that. Prabhupada said, every purport is meant to help you surrender. Tamal Krishna Goswami said that to Prabhupada. Seems like Prabhupada, every purport you just talk about surrender. Prabhupada said, yes, that's basically the whole thing. To understand how to surrender. There's devotees who go on in spiritual life for years and they never change. They just go up and down. They're just going a little bit up and a little bit down. They just hang on. Because they're never in the mood of surrender. They're only in the mood of enjoying Krishna consciousness or somehow just getting by. And our society is never going to grow like that.
Thank you very much.
Really? It's a fact. Prabhupada was pushing us. He was always pushing us. He would say, he would give us a project and then he would give us another one. And we would say, Prabhupada, which one to do? This one, or he would say, do both. He said, don't stop one for the other. Figure out how to do both. He was pushing us. But he would always be there to help us while he was pushing us. Wasn't that he was just pushing us and saying good luck, you know. He was there for us to help us in whatever we needed to carry out his instructions. but that's Krishna consciousness. I hope I didn't offend you.
May I ask one more question?
Yeah.
When you were talking about this process of surrender, I was thinking actually that's the only way to become happy.
Yeah.
And we want to be happy, but somehow it seems that we're just trying in the wrong way. And we have experienced that we are not happy, but still has some fear of surrender, or I don't know.
We're looking for something in our service. Therefore, we're not surrendered so much to the service, but we're looking for something. We're trying to be happy by serving. But Prabhupada said, a higher platform is to serve for the sake of service, and not considering whether you're happy or not. There's four things. Bhaktivinoda Thakur points this out. Those who worship the Lord because they're afraid, if they don't worship the Lord will give them a hard time. He'll make life rough for them. You know, that's what they preach in a lot of traditions. If you don't worship God, you're going to go to hell. Or you're going to suffer. Or you're not going to be happy. So it's the fear principle. It's the lowest. It's the lowest impetus for God consciousness. And higher than that is that if I worship God, I'll be happy. If I serve God, I'll be happy. So their motivation is happiness, and service is the means for happiness. But then again, when it comes to surrender, certain things they prejudge that this is not going to make me happy, so they're not fully surrendered. Or they're not surrendered. They won't surrender. Higher than that, and the platform is to serve out of duty. This is the platform of to practice Krishna consciousness. It's my duty. Whether I like it or don't like it, that's not important. It's my duty. And then the highest platform is at a love. To get to the love platform, you have to be acting on the duty platform, or else you just can't jump to the love platform. But then those who are serving the Lord because they are out of affection or out of bhakti, or devotion, natural love. Well, there's elements in all those. Bhakti is there in all. But in the highest platform, it's there full. But in a duty platform, it's the stepping stone to reaching, you know, love.
Can we compare duty platform with nishtha?
Yeah. Well, nishtha is actually a stage of spiritual progress where one has removed certain anarthas. But one can be on the duty platform even in
this. Yeah,
one can be on that, just on that consciousness. Then it's a struggle to maintain the duty platform when the anarthas are still there. When the anarthas are not there, then it's more natural. But one can adopt the duty platform anytime.
Yeah.
Even at the beginning. It's my duty. It's a sense of responsibility. It's like a husband has to go to work in order to maintain family, whether he likes it or not, he has to do that. Wife has to take care of the house and take care of the children. It's a duty. But duty turns into happiness in Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna reciprocates. Oh, you're serving me so nicely, so he reciprocates. Mm-hmm. And it's no longer duty anymore, it becomes pleasurable.
Mm-hmm. Does it mean that this highest platform, free from the mentality of calculating what service I would like to do?
Yeah. Of course, one can be situated nicely in that service that resonates with their nature, but if the spiritual master comes along and says, well, or the temple authorities come along and say, we need you to do this, this is what happened to Priyavrat, then the devotee is happy to say, okay. You may question. Prabhupada questions. You can question and say, well, why are you asking me to do that? You think, and then once you question in a humble way, not in a challenging way, to understand clear, and then once your questions have been asked, if the request is still there, then you surrender. Okay. If that's what pleases, then yeah. It's just like the Lord Krishna Goswami. And there was that big controversy. There was so many controversies when Prabhupada was around. It was the temple presidents against the Sankirtan, Radha Damodar team. The Radha Damodar team, headed by Vishnu John Maharaj and Tamal Krishna, they had this traveling bus party. And they had buses, and they were going to colleges and preaching, setting up, having kirtans, distributing prasadam, and making devotees. And, you know, they had many buses, and there was 50 devotees on the bus, and they were traveling all over the country. It was a big program. So Tamal Krishna Goswami and Vishnu John were stopping in temples and picking off devotees and grabbing them and putting them on the buses. And so the temple presidents were getting really upset. And so they went to Prabhupada. And so it was back and forth, you know. So, you know, it went on for some time. Prabhupada finally sided with the temple presidents. And he told them, no, you want men for your bus party, you go out there and you make them. You know, you leave the devotees in the temples alone. But Vishnu John Maharaj and Tamal Krishna said, these devotees are in Maya. If you bring them out there, they'll be Krishna conscious. Prabhupada said, you know, still, you shouldn't interfere with the temple presidents. So Prabhupada sided with the temple. It was a big controversy. It lasted for months. And so finally, Tamal Krishna Goswami came to Prabhupada. And when it was all over, he paid his obeisances. He saw Prabhupada. He apologized for what he did. He was sorry. And then he said something. That is a saying that you say when you are sorry and you just say, well, you should punish me. And he said, Prabhupada, it was this thing we used to say when you were kids, you can send me to China. That means if you're bad, they send you to China. So he said, Prabhupada, you can send me to China. Prabhupada's eyes got big. He said, yes, go to China. Preach in China. And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, I was just saying that, Prabhupada. He didn't want to go. He had his service. He had his bus parties. He was doing a lot of other things. Prabhupada said, no, Krishna's speaking through you. You go to China. And he tried everything. I mean, he kept coming back to Prabhupada with arguments and reasons, and somewhat Prabhupada said, I want you to go to China. Prabhupada wouldn't let up. And he finally surrendered, and he went to China. And because of that, the Chinese yatra opened up. And then preaching began in China. Until this day, it's still developing. So, you know, here was a leading preacher who had a big service and was doing big service, and he was making devotees, and Prabhupada all of a sudden just changed him and said, go to China. He took Harikesh Maharaj, and he said Harikesh was attached to Prabhupada. He loved Prabhupada's association. And Prabhupada said, you know, you are a very qualified person. You should go to Eastern Europe and preach. You could do wonderful service. He didn't want to go. He said, Prabhupada, no, I just want to stay with you. Prabhupada said, no, you're qualified. You can do wonderful things. And Prabhupada forced him to go. Finally, he surrendered. And he opened up so many countries and did so much wonderful preaching.
Croatia too.
Prabhupada pushed him. He didn't want to go. Definitely didn't want to go. Prabhupada was always pushing. All the time. What he did in L.A. with the books, that was another story. With the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that story. Devotees were arguing with Prabhupada. It's not like everyone listened to Prabhupada, but in the end they did. Because, you know. But Prabhupada, you know, understood that, you know, in order to spread this movement, you know, devotees have to be pushed a little bit. So, if you're not pushing, but you have to know how to push. Prabhupada said if you break people when you push, then that's your disqualification. If you break them, then it's, and they go away, then, or they don't surrender, then. So he pushed, but Prabhupada was always there to help. Just like when Rameshwar and Radha Vallabha, Prabhupada came and said, I want the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita printed in 1 month. They were doing one book every 2 months. He, Prabhupada, had done 15 books. He wanted them done in 1 month. And they were doing one book every 2 months. They thought Prabhupada was joking. Then they came back to Prabhupada when they really realized it was serious. They said, Prabhupada, it's impossible. And Prabhupada made that famous statement. Possible is a word in a fool's dictionary. That's where that statement came from. And then they came back and made a deal with Prabhupada. They said, Prabhupada, all right. This is the way the devotees would deal with Prabhupada. All right, Prabhupada, if you want us to do it, we'll do it. But you have to stay in L.A. for the time that we're doing it. Prabhupada said, okay. Prabhupada canceled his travel and stayed there for 1 month and while they were doing it. Because, you know, they requested his presence during this whole time. And so he agreed. So Prabhupada, you know, he pushed, but he was also willing to, you know, push himself too. It's like he had his plans, but he also, if there was a need to change, Prabhupada would change also. Now Krishna consciousness is like that. Krishna is always giving us opportunities to surrender. Sometimes we don't get some, and sometimes we do. In America, what happened is we had, our temples are hardly, you know, barely going on in America now. Why? Is because that mood of surrender is lost. And people are just getting comfortable and preaching to the Indian communities and making, getting money and maintaining the temples. But the dynamic preaching force is lost. That's why our preachers are coming to Europe now. I don't feel inspired in America, not so much. Because devotees are not surrendered. They're just not surrendered. In general, there are some devotees who are surrendered. It's not like it's everybody's not. But the mood is not so surrendered. The mood is to maintain. The mood is to keep things going the way they are, you know. And so it's hard. Of course, there's other moods there too, which have caused that mood to be like that. Other things have happened too. But as soon as you get comfortable in spiritual life, you can pretty much figure you're not going to make much advancement. Yes. I'm this class is for me. Because I'm getting a little comfortable, so I'm preaching to my, really, I'm serious. I'm preaching to myself to be ready for, to be always in that mood, because that's the mood that keeps us going. Without that mood, you know, always willing, trying to surrender more, take on more, do what we can, you know. Never to think, well, I need to take it easy. As soon as you start taking it easy, and Maya has so many programs for you, then the world opens up and you have so many other things to do. Yes?
Something is studied about
проповедали, да, Шрила Прабхупад, у меня на тренутку развеял погляд на западу. I heard from some of the older devotees of Srila Prabhupada during the development of the Hare Krishna movement on the West. Rekao da sada ima kao dovoljan broj bhakta i da je sad vrijeme da stanemo sa uključivanjem novih bhakta. He said that now it's enough devotees, now is the time to develop inside.
The time
to stay. And to stay a bit.
Da ima dovoljno broj bhakta za razvoj iskoni, da stanemo i da ako sad dalje se nastavi sa razvijenjem, da će se jednostavno razvoditi bhakti yoga iskoni, tako.
So we said if we now from this point develop more, so that will not be good in a way.
Da je vrijeme na neki način da usporedimo da sad vrijeme da se zgušimo.
In a famous statement Prabhupada said, you know, if you keep adding water to the milk, it becomes more like water. So he said, we have expanded, we have grown big enough, now we have to train our devotees. And that's, I'm saying the same thing. So more important than making new devotees is helping the present devotees, you know, become more and more fixed in their spiritual life. That was Prabhupada's statement. It's not that we should stop preaching, but we shouldn't think our success is simply by making new people. Our success is to improve the quality of the devotees that we have already by giving them more opportunities to serve and to surrender and to take care of their needs within, such as building a system of caring for devotees too, so they can serve and surrender more. That we're also lacking, how to take care of devotees. So, yeah, that was there too. And for the last, when I first joined, when I first started preaching, I was preaching out. I was going to colleges, I was doing, you know, public programs and a lot of that, Sankirtan and stuff. But in the last 15 years, since around 1996, I've been focusing on the devotees more, trying to help the quality of our devotees, because I saw the need for that. So, you know, preachers are also doing that too, trying to focus. We're trying to do both, but our main main emphasis is to take what we have and improve it, not just add to it. Because a lot of societies judge their strength by numbers, how many members they have, how much money they have, how many buildings they have. But what is the quality of the people within the institution is really how you gauge the success or strength. And not so much by, you know, numbers, buildings, money can indicate success, but not necessarily. It's not the absolute principle of success. The absolute principle is purity. Purity is the force. That's why Prabhupada used to say, if I could make one pure devotee, my movement would be successful, because that person can change the whole world. So we want devotees to keep coming forward and surrendering more and more. Another thing is that if you're out there preaching and then all of a sudden you go away for some reason, then what's the value of that kind of service where you're out there trying to help others, but what about helping yourself? So I want you to also understand what they need in order to stay strong, in order to preach. So yeah, that was Prabhupada's statement. Let's concentrate on, you know, quality. We've been focusing too much on quantity. That's what Prabhupada was saying. But now our society is, we want both. We're still reaching out, but at the same time we have to take care of devotees. Because we have a big enough society to do both. Okay, so we should stop here. It's 9:30. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai.
Om Premanandi
hari.
Please call it the Chandra Bhagavatam.
Jai.